Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Cranking out 50,000 watts. You can listen worldwide by getting the app at 810WHB.com. A beautiful, gorgeous morning in Kansas City. It's the low 70s right now. There's very little humidity. I saw some folks out for their morning runs, folks walking their dogs. Great morning to get out there and get there. And it shouldn't be too bad today. I think it's only going to get up to 86. That's tolerable. It's no big deal. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Brad K. Porter. That's at Brad K. Porter. You can follow Chris at Chris underscore Bolig. Two L's, one G, at Chris underscore Bolig. Couple of notes real quick. The Royals get the win last night at Kauffman Stadium over the White Sox, 6-4. Good stuff from Whit Merrifield and Alberto Mondesi. Homer Bailey did okay. Quality start, 6 innings, 7 hits, 3 earned runs, a 6-4 win. Game 2 of the series this afternoon at 1:15. We will have baseball tonight at noon here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Also last night, the big slick guys, you know, Paul Rudd and Rod Regal and Jason Sudeikis. Eric Stone Street, David Koechner, all the guys. The softball game last night continued to raise a lot of money for Children's Mercy Hospital. It's now over $8 million, and the shot of the night came from your MVP quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, who hit a home run that not only cleared the softball fence, the temporary softball fence, but damn near got to the Major League warning track. Awesome stuff from Patrick Mahomes. So there's your headline notes and things you need to know. Also of note, Sporting KC on the road at Toronto FC last night. And for that, we bring in our next guest, Matt Lawrence, color analyst for Sporting KC on the TV broadcast, along with Nate Buchetti. Matt, how are you on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing really well, thank you, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, although I got to say I was a little deflated after the Sporting KC game last night and reading the comments in the Kansas City Star this morning. From Peter Vermes, from Benny Failhaber, and some of the guys, they were also disappointed. And Matt, this is it's happened a couple of times in the last week and a half, 2 weeks now, where Sporting has a lead, get past the 90th minute, get almost to the finish line, and give up that late tying goal. And I don't have an explanation for it, but you're the guy who played this professionally. You analyze this team. You're around them all the time. What is happening in these games? Is it simply just a mental lapse late in the game? What's going on here?
I think simplistically, yeah, you can put it down to a lack of mental strength, maybe mental lapses. But unfortunately, it's mental lapses always at real inopportune moments. Like last night, it was 2 minutes before halftime they conceded the goal.
Yep.
Then it was in injury time, in additional time at the back end of the game where they conceded the goal. And I think you used the word deflated, that you were deflated. I know that Nate Buchetti, Carter Augustine and myself were deflated in the broadcast booth as well. But that's a massive understatement for the players on the pitch and for Peter Vermes and his coaching staff who give their all, you know, day in, day out. They must be absolutely distraught. It would have been a long plane ride home this morning. It would have been an even longer night in the hotel in Toronto last night as well. It's certainly not for any kind of lack of effort. It's just what's going on with Sporting KC right now this season. They're struggling to get wins on the road. They still haven't got that win on the road. And it looked for all intents and purposes like it would happen last night. But once again, hit with that sucker punch, as you said, right at the death. So I think there's a number of things you can look at. Defensively, they've been far too porous this season. This is a side who in previous years in 2019 only conceded 29 goals in 34 games. 2018 they only conceded 40 goals in 34 games, but it's already 27 in 15. At that pace it would be upwards of 50, 55 goals conceded over the season. And that's a monumental increase from the last couple of seasons. And of course the turmoil in terms of the injury list hasn't helped. the number of different defensive partnerships that you've seen. I think we listed it last night as it was the 12th different back line in 15 games, which is almost unheard of. So you can make those excuses, but I don't think Peter Vermees would want to. I think he'd be pointing fingers at defenders and at his team and just saying that there has been a real lapse in concentration at those inopportune moments. And it's going to take a monumental effort now to get into the playoffs and to turn things around. It's become quite a difficult season right now.
We're speaking with Matt Lawrence, color analyst for the Sporting KC television broadcast and also the radio broadcast, which you hear on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And Matt, we talk about, you know, the injuries have certainly been devastating this season. And then going into this game against Toronto, both teams had key players missing for international duty. So it was a bad combination for both teams last night, and just for Sporting not to be able to hold on. And it was noted in the paper, the Kansas City Star again, the Sporting KC squad has now left 5 points on the floor after the 90th minute of games, or in extra time of games. And those 5 points are critical. I mean, it could be in the playoff zone with those 5 points.
Well, they would be, yeah. They're only 3 points out of the playoffs right now, Brad. And yeah, to leave 5 points on the table after the 90th minute, which technically should be the end of the game, but we all know with additional time, there's always at least three or four minutes added. Yeah, that is just down to lapses in concentration. And as you go further and further along the season and more away games, you just get almost, I don't want to say scared, because no professional player is scared, but psychologically and mentally, it's tough to see out those games. As a defence, you drop deeper and deeper, and you end up almost defending your own goal line and inviting pressure on. And I think that's what happened last night. In the end, Sporting KC were almost defending the penalty spot, which is only 12 yards out. And it was a wave after wave of Toronto attack. And then it was just that, as I say, it was just a moment's lapse at the death where two players were let free, one to run in behind the defence to cross the ball and the other for the player to run into the six-yard box and just tap home. So, yeah, it was a crying shame. And as you say, I'm not a big fan of MLS games being played in this international break. It's almost not fair on the paying public who want to go and see the best players available, and they weren't available. Obviously, no Russell and Namath, both with 7 goals for SKC. No Altidore or Osorio for TFC, who had 5 goals or have 5 goals and 3 goals respectively. So it's a bit of a shame, but that's what makes MLS, I guess, unpredictable, and certainly it's even more unpredictable to predict these results within the international break that we're in right now.
Our guest this half hour is Matt Lawrence, analyst for Sporting KC. You can follow him on Twitter at Matty J. Lawrence. So do you prefer Matt or Matty?
Either or. Matt back home in England and Matty over here in the States. So whatever you feel. Or Matthew to my mother. So
okay. I got you. When the lineup came out last night, I realized, you know, with Russell out and, you know, not having Namath, you got to change some things up at the top. And Daniel Shalloway has been a very reliable player for Sporting KC over the last couple of seasons. But he did not have what I would call a great first half. In fact, it just wasn't very good. And Peter Vermees felt so strongly about it that he yanked him at halftime. Was Shalloway just out of his game? Was he nicked up a little bit? Because it just didn't look very good.
He suffered injuries at the beginning of the season, which has meant that he hasn't played enough football this season. And yeah, obviously, to get removed at halftime, you're obviously not showing enough to the manager, and that's why Peter Vermees wanted the change. I don't think it was just in terms of his attacking prowess. I think it was also defensively as well. It has already had a slight lapse in concentration in the previous game against Houston Dynamo when he switched off the back post and Houston scored from that. So I think it was almost coming. But look, Daniel Shalloway is a fantastic player, and he'll get back to his best, that's for sure. He just needs to get more and more reps in, more and more minutes under his belt. But look, it doesn't take you or I to say that it wasn't his best game last night, because, you know, Peter Vermees removed him at halftime and brought in Callum Rowe. So it was there for all to see. Peter Vermees kind of exposed that problem himself with his interview at Carter Augustine at halftime. And yeah, he implemented that change. And it very nearly worked. It's just a crying shame, as we've already mentioned, that they conceded that goal basically in the 95th minute, I think.
We're speaking with Matt Lawrence talking Sporting KC after the 2-2 draw up in Toronto last night, conceding that late goal, which was poor defense. I'm not going to put that on Tim Mealy, but I was thinking about this, Matt. How much worse would this season be without a Tim Melia making late saves and crucial saves for this team? He's been absolutely terrific.
Yeah, he's been terrific now for the last three seasons. One of the best players SKC have had over those seasons. And look, we showed it on broadcast last night that at halftime, Tim Melia had made probably three or four good saves. He would probably want to make them all. He would expect to because he's a goalkeeper who has very high standards. But certainly one of the saves when he dived down to his right to save a header from Liam Fraser was right up there. I don't quite want to say world-class, but it was certainly a top-class save. And yes, without Tim Melia, over the last three seasons, and more specifically as we're talking about last night's game and this season, yeah, without Tim Melia, things would be worse. But that's what he's paid the money for. He goes out there and he's in great shape, and he has been keeping the team in games. Unfortunately, you know, he certainly wasn't culpable for either of the goals that TFC scored last night. And yeah, he certainly kept out another one or two certain goals as well. So I think SKC will always have a lot to thank Tim Melia for, but he's only one of many players who've been so fantastic over the last few seasons.
One more thing on Tim Melia. And look, Matt, I'm just going to tell you, I'm a homer. I'm Sporting KC through and through. I don't care. I'm a member of the media, but I'm a homer. I root for him all the time. I love all the guys. And I got to ask you this about Tim Melia, because my kids and I talk about this because they're fans as well. I know the answer to this question, but I got to ask anyway. Why has Tim Melia never been given an opportunity with the U.S. men's national team? I realize they have their system. They have the guys that they've developed, the guys that they want. But you'd think at some point over the last couple of years, he would have gotten a shot somewhere in a friendly or something.
I certainly would have played him. I think this season is maybe a little bit different. He is now 33 years of age. He's obviously conceding a lot of goals. Most of them aren't his fault. But in the previous two seasons, 2017, 2018 seasons, I'm totally with you. I'm obviously a homer as well. I obviously love everybody at Sporting KC. I do the broadcast, as you've said. But I feel I can be analytical, and I feel I don't need to be biased. But look, Tim has been the best goalkeeper, or the best American goalkeeper, in 2017-18, without a shadow of a doubt. Maybe Zach Steffen's getting up there now as well, but I'm with you. The only reason he isn't getting a shot is because of his age, and younger goalkeepers are being given a chance. That is the only thing. For me, it's not his ability. It's merely what it says on his birth certificate, which is a crying shame for Tim Melia. But, you know, Greg Perholter and previous managers, Dave Sarakin and Bruce Arena, have their own ideas, and you kind of have to accept those. But when you look at it analytically, Tim has been the best U.S. goalkeeper for the last, you know, probably 2 years, if not 3 years now.
We're speaking with Matt Loris, analyst for Sporting Kansas City, 2-2 draw in Toronto last night. I guess a bright spot, Matt. I always like to find something bright. Gerso Fernandez, who's been banged up quite a bit this year, I thought he was just fantastic last night. He was just when he's healthy, he can just fly and tear down the wings.
Yeah, he didn't have a great season last season, but this season, as you say, he's been absolutely flying. He hit the ground running in pre-season, then in the Champions League, and obviously now in the MLS. Obviously, a real shame that he broke his wrist sort of about 5 weeks ago now. And I was amazed to see him so lightning quick still last night. If anybody saw the broadcast and saw the great big cast he had on his arm, it looked as though he was dragging about a 5-kilogram weight behind him. I know he wasn't. I'm only joking. I know it would have been a lightweight cast, but it just looked very cumbersome. But I'm with you. He had a good game last night. It's great to have him back. Just a shame that he couldn't be partnered with Namath and with Russell, because those guys are away. Namath obviously with Hungary, Johnny Russell with Scotland. We wish them the best with their countries, but you want your best players playing in MLS games, and it was a shame that Sporting KC were missing those players last night.
We're about 3 weeks in now to having Benny Failhaber back with the club, which I think is great. I love Benny, as a player. I think he's just terrific, and he's funny, but he's a hardcore player as well. But now that we're 3 weeks into this, what's your analysis of what he's done for the team? Just me personally, not having played professionally, I think it's been a good addition. I don't know if it's great, but it's a good addition for the team. I think it's somebody they needed. But what's your impression of what he's allowed the team to do, especially working through the midfield since his arrival?
It's definitely a good acquisition. I'm with you. It's not a great acquisition. It's a good acquisition at the right time as well. It's not just what Benny brings to the pitch and his ability. He's technically very gifted. I think he works in conjunction with Felipe Gutierrez and Elie very well. normally it's just Elie who sits and dictates the tempo of play from that number six position. But the last couple of games that Benny's played, him and Elie will switch up. So that's one good addition. But also I just think it's his personality. You mentioned it. And that is exactly what Sporting KC need. They need experience. They need players that understand that Peter Vermees' system. And he's just a great guy to have in that dressing room, geeing up the players. So I think it was a perfect move for Benny Failhaber, who he's already said in public him and his wife wanted to get back to Kansas City. And for Peter Vermees, it was the opportunity to bring back not only a good player, but somebody who is already intrinsically linked to Sporting KC and the style of play, the footballing ethos that Peter Vermees had. So it makes perfect sense. Look, it doesn't look as though it's working perfectly on the field because Benny Failhaber hasn't brought 5-6 wins with him. But, you know, that's not down to him. But things are certainly looking up with Benny, with Gutierrez and Elie in the middle of midfield, waiting until, obviously, Roger Espinosa gets back fit. And then it'll be great to have all four of those guys fighting for those central midfield positions.
We're speaking with Matt Lawrence, analyst for Sporting KC on the television broadcast on Fox Sports and the radio broadcast here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Matt, it feels like Sporting KC might need to get a new nickname, the Nomads, because I don't know when they're ever coming home again. They're not back home for July until July. So the whole month of June, no home games. They're going to Minnesota Wednesday for that Open Cup game, which drives me crazy. I don't know why they feel the need for Sporting in Minnesota to play every year in the Open Cup, but it is what it is. And then it's on to Columbus, and then it's Real Salt Lake, and finally back home on Wednesday, July the 3rd. These long road trips, look, I have my beefs with MLS and the schedule makers, but it is what it is. You play the games when you do, and I don't like playing Minnesota all the time, but it's a tough stretch, and this team is going to have to figure it out on the road. There's going to be no home cooking for another 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's an incredibly tough stretch. It's not just the fact that the games are away. It's just they're literally traversing the country, aren't they? East to west, west to east. It's certainly a tough run of games. But as you say, all teams throughout MLS are faced with these troubles. Look, on a positive spin, you have to say that so far, Sporting KC are unbeaten away from home. They've got two draws. Granted, they would have wanted at least one of those to be a win, but things are definitely looking better away from home. I think they're looking good going forward. It's just that defensive instability at the moment that they need to shore up. And Peter Vermees said it last night, and we know that they're conceding too many goals, and that's certainly something that will be looked at throughout training sessions. Whether there's any training sessions back here in Kansas City at Pinnacle, who knows? They may well virtually stay on the road the whole time, but it is a tough stretch, and yes, I guess the anomaly is that Minnesota game in the US Open Cup. We'll see a lot of different players in that, I'm sure, but then it's back to first-class MLS playing Columbus, who aren't doing so well themselves, and Peter Vermees and his team will be desperate for a first 3 points away from home there.
All right, a couple of final things for you, Matt Lawrence. On the international level, U.S. men getting ready for the Gold Cup coming up here in a couple of weeks. They'll have a friendly against Venezuela tomorrow. Did not look good against Jamaica earlier this week in that 1-1 draw, and then the final roster came out. No Sporting players, so we won't lose any players to that competition, although Gideon Zalalem is going to be called up to the U-20s here. But that Gold Cup coming up, the roster comes out, a lot of weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth that Josh Sargent is not on the roster. But as you watched Greg Berhalter try to get into this, establish himself as the coach on the national team level, what do you think of what he's done so far, and what do you think of the U.S. Men's performances ahead of the Gold Cup?
I'm certainly not going to judge Greg Berhalter until after the Gold Cup. I think most friendlies are relatively meaningless in terms of results. Granted, the performance against Jamaica wasn't great, but there's no Pulisic, there was no Adams, there was no McKenney. There were probably three of the best players, if not the three best players. So I think people were getting a bit too worked up about that Jamaica result. The Venezuela friendly going into tomorrow is a lot more important. Obviously, the result doesn't mean anything, but the performance, you want a decent performance. You'd have thought that Berhalter will be putting out virtually his starting 11 or what he considers his starting 11 for the Gold Cup competition. I think it's going to be great that there's a game, obviously, here in Sporting KC, or at Children's Mercy Park, rather, on I think it's June the 26th. So there's going to be some good games to watch. But yeah, reserve judgment until after the tournament. It certainly needs to be bare minimum. I would have thought the US would need to be getting to the final. And then Greg Berhalter, I think, can look at the Gold Cup in a positive light. But let's see what happens after that. And of course, that's let's not forget the under-20s as well, who are playing, probably kicking off in about 10 minutes against Ecuador in the quarterfinals of the under-20 World Cup.
See, I need the voice of reason to bring me off the ledge, because after that game against Jamaica, I know the game doesn't count, but still I was like, ah, come on, that wasn't very good. So thank you for bringing me back down to earth on that a little bit. The U-20s today, as you mentioned, coming up at 10 o'clock, which is another big step in the development process. And the final thing for you, Women's World Cup is underway in France. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of it. I know France got the big 4-0 win. I'm waiting for the U.S. women. Have to wait until Tuesday, and they play Thailand. But I'm excited for it because, personally, my favorite player on the team is Becky Salbrun, central defender. She played here for FC Kansas City, won a couple of championships. She's a great player. She's a tough, hard-nosed player, and she's a good person as well. And so I pull for her, and I can't wait to watch the women get on the field Tuesday in the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, well, I think the U.S. are obviously one of the favorites. I watched bits of the France game, obviously the hosts yesterday, and they looked incredibly strong, also a favorite. So right now, for me, it's certainly the French and the U.S. looking as though they'll be lifting that cup. But look, it's going to be a wonderful tournament, and yeah, I can't wait for the ability to start watching some games. Haven't had the luck yet to watch a whole game. As I sort of said, I saw the French highlights, and they look in pretty devastating form. So, yeah, looking forward to a fun tournament.
Hey, Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate your time so much. Thanks for getting up early. Again, sporting with the 2-2 draw against Toronto, disappointing for sure, but hopefully better things ahead. They'll play next Wednesday in the Open Cup at Minnesota, and then back in league play next Sunday at Columbus on Fox Sports KC and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Matt, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
No problem, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
All right, appreciate it. That is Matt Lawrence, analyst for Sporting KC on the TV and radio broadcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Matty J. Lawrence. So, you know, I'm still disappointed in the result, but I don't know. To me, it's just going to be kind of a wait and see. Like, okay, so like with the Royals, I know that season is gone. Okay, that ship has sailed. With Sporting, okay, not playing well, conceding these late goals, they're still just 3 points out of the playoff zone. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that everybody starts getting back healthy, the international guys get back, and this team starts playing better soccer.
I'd have to look at some things, too, in terms of how do eight seeds usually fare in MLS.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you think of eight seeds and NHL, those sometimes actually...
Oh, sure.
They can have some upsets and advance a little bit. NBA, not the same thing at all.
Not
very
at all.
Different, but we'll see. It's not a series. It's a one game. So
yes, which I like.
I'd have to look more into that to see, you know, if you're in that 7 or 8 spot, how do you usually fare in MLS Cup playoffs?
I never understood why they had the 2-game series in the first couple of rounds and then only 1 game for the championship. If you're going to have 2, then have 2 for the championship. But now that it's all 1 game, much, much better. And the home field advantage means so much more. So we'll see if Sporting can get back on track. Again, they'll play Wednesday up in Minnesota in U.S. Open Cup play, and that game will be on ESPN+. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll kick around some things. We got some more to talk about. Got a big list. Got a stack of notes. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's been a while since I've heard Jamarcoy. I hammers. I don't know how you pronounce it. I always say Jamarcoy.
Jamarcoy, I think. I don't know.
Jamarcoy, whatever it is. Videos were cool. His music's fun. I don't know if he's put out anything in a while. At least nothing that's gone mainstream. Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. An absolutely gorgeous morning here in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Just wrapped up with Matty Lawrence, talking a little Sporting KC and the disappointment. The Open Cup, look, I know it's not big on everybody's list, but when Sporting is in the championship game, everybody wants to win it. And then Rob Heineman takes the trophy around town and shows it to everybody. I think the last time Sporting won it, Rob Heineman, one of the members of the ownership group, I think he went to the stands and handed it to the fans and like, okay, enjoy it for like 20, 30 minutes, whatever, and then we'll come and get it back. You got to trust the cauldron, right? This U.S. Open Cup match Wednesday, it's Minnesota, and look, it's not everybody's bag, but it seems like every year it's Sporting in Minnesota, and Sporting's going up to Minnesota, and it's just, mix it up a little bit. Good Lord.
Minnesota's actually good this year.
I know, which is amazing because they were so awful last year or the year before. Is this their third season? Or second season?
I think it's their second season. And then they go into their new...
the new stadium.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I feel like every kind of MLS, the new MLS stadium kind of looks like the same now. They're just trying to... I don't know.
I've seen touches. Flair.
It looks really cool. The Allianz, I think, they're calling it.
Yep. And Portland just opened up their refurbished stadium. They didn't build a new one, but they added seats and they added a bunch of stuff. It looks good stuff. So, yeah, U.S. Open Cup. And then Sporting back on the road next weekend, Sunday, in Columbus. Also not playing well. Chance for the Chiefs to, for Sporting KC to get a road win. Hopefully. They're close. Just hasn't happened. All right, so we thank Matt Lawrence for coming on. Let's talk. We have not gotten into Chiefs football yet, other than Patrick Mahomes' amazing home run at the Big Slick softball game last night at Kauffman Stadium and the epic bat flip, which was a lot of fun. Travis Kelce was out there. Dustin Colquitt was out there. I was over at, I mentioned this earlier in the show, I was over at Channel 5 last night with Danny Welniak on the KCTV 5 Locker Room show, which is on KSMO, and she did a nice story on Mecole Hardman, the wide receiver, the draft pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, everybody's teammates, coaches, are just raving about Mecole Hardman. Speed, hands have gotten a little bit better. I think Matt Derrick told us after the first round of OTAs he was a little bit shaky, which is to be expected for these rookies and draft picks. But they're raving about Mecole Hardman. Now, would you expect Patrick Mahomes or Andy Reid to step up to the microphone and say, gosh, he's really struggling out there. I don't know what we're going to do. Of course they're going to say something nice, but they went a little bit probably more than they needed to, which means they like what they see. Again, they're not in shoulder pads, not in pants. They're in helmets and T-shirts. I don't even think they put on the shells anymore for OTAs. So about all you can judge is the speed and the hands. You can't really judge anything else. The route running, you're not being hit. You're not being knocked off your route by a defensive back. So good returns for Mecole Hardman. And he's a guy that's going to have to, like any high draft pick, he's going to have to be an impact player in year one. Maybe impact is overstating. He's got to play and play well. Doesn't need to be a starter unless he can go earn it. That'd be great. I would love to see a draft pick go out and earn a starting spot. Be awesome. Colts did it last year with a couple of guys that turned into all pros. But he's definitely got to be a contributor and not just... you know, finish the season with, 15 catches for 220 yards. No, he's got to be a productive player. He's got to be way more than Chris Conley, which I thought he was probably in Kansas City a year too long. Or if you talk to Danny Klinkscale, maybe 2 years too long. But Hardman's got to be a productive guy. I mean, you've got Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson towards the top. Gary Dieter, I don't know. I don't expect anything from Gary Dieter. Whatever you get from him is a bonus. But Hardman's going to have to be a guy. He's going to have to be a guy. So Hardman talked at OTAs this week and talked about how he felt about the progress he's made since getting in and working out with the Kansas City Chiefs.
It's coming to me. It's still fast, though, especially coming from college and new material. Just new play calling, new concept. So it's hard at first, but the more you do it, more repetition you get, the easier it becomes.
How do you feel like your chemistry is building with Patrick, finally being able to work with him during OTAs?
I'm still learning from him, learning how he throw balls, learning where he want me to be, where I need to be. So I say the chemistry growing. I'm getting comfortable every day with all my routes, running my routes. So eventually we'll get it down and we'll get it where we need to be.
Mecole, what's it like to catch a Patrick Mahomes pass?
I think it's nice. He got a great arm. He's a good quarterback, man. And just being on the same field with him and, talk with him and work with him, it's impressive.
But does it vary, though? I mean, from a hard ball to sometimes a soft touch? I mean,
yeah.
Tell me what you got to adjust to.
Yeah, it just depending on what route you're running. You know, you got the hard balls and tight windows. You got the touch pass on like some medium intermediate route. So, but definitely he got a cannon that he can throw it hard, or he can throw it soft, and he definitely can throw it down the field. So he got the whole tree with him.
Yeah, you have to be ready for everything with Patrick Mahomes. Got to be ready for everything. Sidearm, behind the back, left-handed, deep, short, power, soft. So Hardman is learning quickly, and training camp is going to be the place where he's going to get it most. These OTAs are kind of learning the ropes a little bit, kind of figuring things out, figuring your way through the National Football League. When the Chiefs get up to St. Joe, that's when the work is going to begin. Andy Reid also spoke this week about his young draft pick wide receiver, Mecole Hardman.
He's getting better every day. We're asking him to do a lot, and he's staying up on it. Sometimes he's not quite sure. You know, there's a little hesitation, and then the next time he runs it, he's got it. And so that's what you're looking for. And he, you know, we've been happy with his progress. So we've been giving him quite a few reps with Patrick, and that's the way you learn. So this is not – there's certain things that are finesse on this, and there's certain things that you got to really roll on. And so he's sorting all that out and learning. That's all part of the learning. And then we're throwing 8 million coverages at him. So he's got to put that in the computer, too, as he goes. But he's handling it. He's a smart kid. He's just got to learn how we do it.
Yeah, and that'll come with it. Like he said, he's a little hesitant the first time he runs a route, and then he nails it the next time. And that'll just continue to grow, and that's what you expect from a draft pick. One more soundbite here, and this is Patrick Mahomes talking about the young wide receivers as a group.
I think it's doing well. I mean, they're really competing. They're going out there. They realize the speed of which we practice. I mean, it is different. We practice fast the whole time. We're really competing. And I think those guys have really learned a ton in the short amount of time that they've been here. So I'm excited for them to finish out this week, finish out mini camp, and be ready for the training camp ahead.
Do you give them feedback? Like if they miss something, are you right there to?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole offense, though. It's not just me. I mean, as an offense, we talk. As a defense, I know the defense has talked a lot this OTAs. We want to make each other better. It's not about getting on top of each other and getting on somebody. It's about telling them, hey, this is how it's done. We practice fast, run the routes this way, and then the next time they get up, we go right back to them.
Patrick Mahomes talking about the young wide receivers, and he's talking about the speed of practice. This is what he's talking about. So if you go to a college football practice, you got like 100 dudes out there, okay? You got 100 guys. That's a lot of moving parts. And it moves slow compared to the National Football League. Now you get to the NFL, and you're in OTAs. You might have 90 guys, but everybody knows where they're supposed to be at what time, and it moves fast. To use an old guy term, lickety-split. There's no standing around. No standing around at all. So that's what he's talking about, the speed of the game. So with Mecole Hardman, we talked about, you know, his speed when he was drafted, the fact that he can return punts, he can return kicks, and immediately after the draft pick, the thought was, is this an insurance policy in case Tyreek Hill is not on this team? Because it had just come out, the audio tapes had just come out between he and his fiance, Crystal Espina, and all of it was awful. All of it bothered me. Stuff that really bothered me was the fact that there seemed to be no concern for the child in the discussion, but that was a short snippet. We don't know everything that was said and everything that was talked about. Now, here's the latest on Tyreek Hill that came out this week. The Johnson County prosecutor, said, we're not actively investigating possible child abuse accusations. If they receive additional information, they'll reevaluate. There is a continuing investigation by the Kansas Department of Children and Families. The NFL has begun their investigation, but they are waiting for permission from the Kansas Children and Families to interview Tyreek Hill, so they're not going to do it yet. So here's the thing. I think it's important, and if any lawyer thinks I'm wrong, that's fine. You can call in. But to just say not actively investigating, that doesn't mean this thing is over to me. They have the information. If they can get something concrete, they'll move forward with it. Not actively investigating means they think they have everything they have. But if there's something new comes to light, they'll look into it. The other part is the Kansas Department of Children and Families is continuing their investigation. So this is not over yet. It's not over yet. The NFL just started their investigation. It is not over yet. Now here's what I, when when I run into people, they ask, what do you think is going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen. But if you want to think about other cases and how the National Football League has handled it, Kareem Hunt wasn't charged with anything, right? This video came out. He's got four games. Four-game suspension. Ezekiel Elliott wasn't formally charged, right? Or Kareem Hunt was eight games, pardon me. I said four, eight games. And Ezekiel Elliott got six games.
And you remember that appeals process that
yes.
Ezekiel Elliott tried to go through that whole, it seemed
Jerry
like the
Jones.
Whole summer and
yeah.
Jerry Jones, and they just backed off because they knew they weren't going to win it. So, yeah, so this is, you know, if the audio tape doesn't come out around draft time, are the Chiefs drafting Mecole Hardman? Second round, first pick of the second round? I don't think so. Just from my opinion and how I viewed the team before the audio tape came out, let's say the audio tape comes out 2 weeks after the draft, mm-hmm. then I don't know. I don't think Mecole Hardman's on this team, but you have the insurance policy. It because it's looking like I saw reports yesterday. I think it was from Ian Rappaport or I think it was Ian Rappaport about that they expect that Tyreek Hill will probably be back by training camp,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. It's still up in the air. The NFL is, I don't know how long this investigation is going to take. It's probably going to take, who knows, and how much can they gather from what they've been given by Johnson County, and especially with the Child Protective Services still doing their investigation, who knows? But as we talked about with Zeke, he didn't get charged and he still got six games. So it is looking like Tyreek Hill is most likely going to get some sort of suspension, probably. Mm-hmm. Whether that be like 4, 2, 6, I'm not completely sure.
And we still don't know exactly what happened. And I think Seth Kizer, who's a frequent guest here on Sports Radio 810 WHB and also ESPN Kansas City, he does a video analysis about the Chiefs for The Athletic. He's a lawyer. He's a pastor. And so people ask him questions all the time about the law. And he's been in family court before. And he said, the thing is, you don't know. And getting to the truth is a difficult thing. You have differing stories. You have differing accounts of what happened or what didn't happen. And it's a long process. And it's a difficult process. If you have two people giving two different stories, who do you believe? I don't know. And that's why I'm not going to jump to conclusions on that. I would just say, based on the NFL's history, there is likely to be a suspension of some kind. Just going off their history. Like I said, I'm not going to get into the case because I don't know what happened inside that house. I don't. None of us do. There's three people who know. Three people who know. And I'm not sure what they're telling the prosecutor. I'm not sure what they're telling the child and family services people. I don't know. If there is a suspension, then Tyreek Hill can go to training camp, and then he has to go completely away from the team for however long a suspension might be. But the NFL usually hands out something for something like that, but they'll have to look at it. They'll see stuff that you and I won't see.
Agreed.
Maybe.
I mean,
yeah.
Possibly. Most likely. I mean, the NFL is a $1 billion corporation who has private investigators, who has multiple people that they can pay a lot of money to try to figure out to the best of their ability what actually went down mm-hmm. with this. It's just sad because it's been really highlighted with the Chiefs just because with Kareem Hunt and then Tyreek Hill about the problems with domestic violence in the NFL and other acts of violence by NFL players. But it's just not with the Chiefs, too. It's not that the Chiefs are the only franchise that have players with problematic pasts. If you remember when Marvin Lewis was the Bengals head coach, they had multiple players that they took on with arrests and history of violence and whatnot. So it happens all across the NFL. This isn't just a Chiefs problem. This is a league-wide problem. And when it comes down to it, this is a league about winning. And they will take second or third chances on players no matter what the past is. Because if it will translate to wins on the field, then they are going to sign the player or give the player a second or third chance.
And it's proximity, too. These two things happen with Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill, very close to each other. And we're not that far removed from a Chiefs player killing the mother of his child and then driving to Arrowhead and taking his own life, killing himself. We're not that far removed from that. What, 5 years ago? 6 years ago? Wasn't that long ago?
That was 11, I think.
2011? Okay, so 7 years ago?
Yeah, when Yoli was still here.
That's not that long ago. So, well, we'll see. We'll have to wait and see what the NFL has to say. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll hit a couple of more Chiefs things, and then we'll take a break. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll bring in Aaron Torres from FoxSports.com. We'll talk a little college hoops, a little KU, some news and notes, who KU might still be able to get on the roster before they start their summer workouts. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I have heard this one before, but I do not remember who this is.
This is a group called Boy Pablo, and the song is Feeling Lonely. It's a nice little groove that I like.
I like that. That's a fun, that's like a First Fridays kind of music on a Saturday. I like that.
Oh, yeah. First Fridays, baby.
Yeah.
I wish I was talking about going to First Fridays last night, but there was just too much going on with sports-wise. I couldn't make the time out. I haven't been. I went to First Fridays for the first time last year. It was awesome, so I really enjoyed it.
No, it's a blast. The only problem is trying to find a place to park. You got to park far away. Like, park down at Union Station or something, and then take the streetcar or something.
I just took Uber.
Did you? That's probably a better idea.
Yeah, just so I don't have to deal with a car, and especially if you're drinking or whatnot down there, you don't have to worry about driving home.
First Fridays. Yeah, I haven't been to one in a while. Need to go to that. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. Final few minutes of hour number two, then we'll charge ahead into hour number three. Aaron Torres from Fox Sports Radio will join us. We'll talk college basketball, some possibilities for KU coming up out of the blue over the last week or so. So we'll talk about that. We were just talking Chiefs, and I was reading a couple of notes, some of the weird things going on in the National Football League this offseason. So you remember when John Dorsey got fired? It was odd timing, right? Because it was after the draft. My thinking is, why do you let a GM go through a draft if you're going to fire him anyway? But that's just me. I don't know why you don't make that decision a lot sooner, like as soon as the season is over.
Well, I also think it had something to do with when they released Jeremy Maclin, how that all went down.
Didn't go well.
Yeah, so I think that had something to
do with
it.
There were some personality things going on. So then you have, the Jets fired their GM. Odd timing. And now the Texans. And the reason I bring up the Texans is because there's the Chiefs tie-in here. So this week, the Texans fired Brian Gain, or Gainey. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. G-A-I-N-E. Fired him. Kind of like, wow, that's odd. First week of June, second week of June. Firing the GM in a team that's supposed to be competitive. And I had forgotten about till I was reading some notes that Charles Robinson, after the firing, he had tweeted out, and I saw it. Gainey has made zero progress in getting a contract extension in place for Jadeveon Clowney this offseason. In fact, he actually shopped Clowney to the Chiefs in April. They haven't made a lot of progress with any of their other players either. It's been a quiet offseason in Houston, so I don't know who decides. We haven't done a damn thing. Is that the owner? Is that the team president? Somebody has to make the decision. He's not getting it done.
Meanwhile, the Colts have a very good draft, and once again with Chris Ballard, and get Justin Houston, which I think is a very strong pickup for them.
I don't think it would work financially for Jadeveon Clowney to be with the Chiefs after all the money he spent on Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu and more money that you might have to spend on another corner if you can find one. So financially, it probably wouldn't work out. But boy, that'd be a fun damn offense to or defense to watch if Jadeveon Clowney was part of this revamped defense.
And then, especially after, you know, with Houston at least being in the AFC South, and
right.
then after that rookie year that Deshaun Watson, how promising it looked
right.
in terms of the future and with the defense in terms of the defensive front, and having. I believe at that time they still had A.J. Bouye at corner before he is now. Now he's with the Jaguars. But now it's looking – it's completely flip-flopped. Colts now are looking like
– oh, yeah.
Not only a favorite to win the division, one of the favorites in the AFC.
You'd have to go – well, until the Patriots are knocked off, I guess you got to go Patriots. You don't have to, but you'd be Patriots, Colts – and this is no particular order. Patriots, Chiefs, Colts – maybe the Chargers.
Chargers.
Those would be my.
I mean, there's still question marks. You know, Anthony Lynn. How is they have the talent, but coaching wise, how is it going? And Phillip Rivers, how will he do in this? Just another year older, but
yeah. And by the way, Therese Paylor noted on that the comment about Jadeveon Clowney, and he was being shopped to the Chiefs back in April. Therese Paylor noted on Twitter, per a source I'm told, Houston reached out to KC about Clowney prior to the Frank Clark trade, but the Chiefs. We're locked in on Clark as their number one guy. And Clowney's had, you know, some serious injuries in his career. Frank Clark has put up huge numbers. And by all accounts, again, OTAs is a small sample size. You can't get to know everything about a player in these 3 and 4 day sessions, okay? But everybody with the Chiefs, in particular the players, say that Frank Clark has come in and showed a tremendous amount of leadership. Because we were wondering, you know, with no Justin Houston, with no Eric Berry, would this be a Chris Jones opportunity to step up? And Chris Jones isn't here. And Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu are seizing the opportunity to be leaders on this football team.
Agreed. And now with that post-June 1st cut money, you know, now that Eric Berry off the books, what do they do to try to at least salvage something at cornerback to kind of fill some needs there to kind of complete and revamp this defense? You have the two safeties that you want. Now, in my opinion, the most important position on the defensive side of the ball, cornerback, at least in today's NFL, you got to be more sure there. I mean, yes, Kendall Fuller, good slot guy, can cover guys in the slot. That's where he's best suited. And you have Charvarius Ward. How will he do in a full 16 game schedule? It looked promising last year. And Bashaud Breeland, who just, you know, 2 or 3 years ago was looking like he was going to get big money until he had that foot problem or mm-hmm. whatever the injury was, where he wasn't getting cleared by any teams in physicals. So we'll see. There's a lot of unknown with that position, but it's going to be something to look at going into not only minicamp but training camp as well.
And one other note on the Texans firing their GM, having shopped Jadeveon Clowney to the Chiefs in April. They also lost the bidding war for Tyrann Mathieu. It's a player they really wanted to keep, and they didn't get it done. And Brett Veach and the Chiefs did. Probably just another one of those, probably a building fire, and that was another log on the fire. You didn't get Jadeveon Clowney signed up, and you didn't bid enough on Tyrann Mathieu, and you lost a player that you really depended on.
And the smart thing Veach did was front load both of those contracts,
yep.
So making it on the back end,
yep.
Not heavy on cap issues for the Chiefs with those two contracts.
All right, back with hour number 3 here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB.